Hello, welcome to Tales from the Potting Bench. I'm Adam, a gardener, writer, and podcaster with a passion for hearing people's stories and sharing them with you. Before we get into this week's episode, I'd like to ask, if you listen to this podcast and enjoy it, then please consider rating and leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. It's easy to do, takes a few minutes of your time, but it helps this podcast get into the ears of more like-minded planty people. I'm thrilled to say that this podcast continues to be sponsored by the wonderful people at PlantGrow, producers of award-winning organic compost, mulch, and fertiliser made with zero chemicals. Great for your garden, and even greater for the planet. And I know, because it's all I use on my garden. Don't forget, if you use the code POTTINGBENCH on plantgrow.co.uk, you'll get 10% off your order. We're now in the sixth season of the podcast, and this time we're doing things slightly differently, as over the course of the coming weeks, we'll be hearing from some of the most interesting women across the UK as I bring them together in what I'm calling a celebration of women and plants. I am constantly inspired by the women around me in the garden world, and it's high time we're able to bring them together and share their passion with them. So, let's introduce my next guest. Have you ever watched Garden Rescue and wondered whether they actually do it in the time that they say they do? Or have you ever thought whether the neighbours want to get involved? Well, in this week's episode, we answer those exact questions as I talk with presenter, designer, and garden consultant, Katie Rushworth. In this episode, we also talk about what garden trends Katie thinks we could still see from the gardening year ahead, and so much more. Enjoy. So, for anyone who is not familiar with you right now, who are you and what do you do?
So my name is Katie Rushworth. I am a garden consultant and designer. And for the last, I've done that for the last, 16, 17 years now. And for 13 of those years, I was a presenter alongside Alan Titchmarsh for ITV's Love Your Garden.
You were indeed. I think Love Your Garden is one of the things, obviously, that so many people will know you for, and it's such a fantastic program. Did you? I'm gonna say, did you enjoy being on there? Of course, you enjoyed being on there. How did all of this kind of start, particularly with Love Your Garden?
It was kind of out of the blue, really. TV was never an area that I've had any desires to go into, but when I was doing my final year of garden design degree. One of my classmates got an email sent to them saying, a bit like a job description saying, we're looking for TV presenters for this new show, you should apply. And she showed me the email and was like, you should go for this. So I did that weekend. I thought, you know what, I'll just have a go. And then I heard straight back from them the following day and they said, can you come down to London this week for an interview? So I had to go and do a screen test in London. And then it was a bit like Gardening X Factor. I had to go through like different rounds. There were like three separate rounds over the course of maybe 6 weeks. I got the job. And it wasn't until the final round where we had to do a 5-minute masterclass of our choice. I did a little alpine container. And Frances was there, Frances Tophill, my co-presenter, she was there as well. She did all about how to plant strawberries successfully. Right. And we did our little sections. There were another three people there. I think we got down to the final five. And then it was at that point that the chief exec of the production company kind of took us into his kitchen and he said, just so you know, this year, the final five, you'll find out in the next couple of weeks if it's you. And the new show is going to be primetime ITV with Alan Titchmarsh. Because at that point, we didn't know. And we were like,
so you didn't even know that at that point?
No.
That's so crazy in hindsight.
It was crazy. But I suppose it was good because I would have been even more terrified than I already was about my auditions. But I had no idea. So that was like such a shock. And then I had like the fear going all the way home after that audition thinking, oh my God, what did I say? And did I say enough? And like, it was quite the bombshell.
Yeah, I can imagine. So let's go back right to the very start before Love Your Garden, because that wasn't kind of it wasn't from day one Love Your Garden, was it? So you went into your kind of gardening life wanting to design kind of right from the start?
No, I didn't. Oh. No, I worked in fashion for 10 years. So I did that before I got into gardening. And then I started gardening kind of odd jobbing. So I started doing, you know, general maintenance, lawns and hedges for elderly ladies whose husbands have passed away, and weeding and things like that. And I kind of built the business from there. And then after kind of a year or two of doing that full time, I'd gone back to night school and done my RHS qualifications. And then after that, I was like, I don't know if I want to cut lawns and hedges forever. There's got to be more to this. So I kind of used my fashion background and thought there's quite a lot of transferable skills. So I went and did a part-time degree in garden design for 4 years. And then, yeah, kind of things went from there, really.
It's funny you say about fashion, because inadvertently, I think you're perhaps the third or fourth person that I spoke to over the last couple of years for the podcast that's gone from fashion to design in the end.
Lots of gardeners have kind of come from design. I think it's just, they're all transferable skills, aren't they? Whether you're putting together a window display, an outfit, a planting plan, organizing, you know, kind of like, if you're a visual person, I think that all those things are really cross over an awful lot.
Yeah, they definitely do. So you did your RHS levels as a night course. I don't even know if you can do that as a night course now. I don't think you can you?
Yeah, years ago it must have been. Well, my daughter was maybe only one or two, and she's 16 now. So yeah, a long time
ago. God, yeah, I'm pretty sure you can't do that. I think you have to kind of do it in the day, as it were. Okay. So you did that, and then you ended up kind of, like you said, a jobbing gardener, etc. And then Love Your Garden kind of happened. So you did, how long were you on Love Your Garden for?
13 series, so 12 years.
Gosh, that's incredible. It's such a long time, isn't it?
Such a long time. I mean, I thought that it would just be one series. Like, I thought it would just be like 6 episodes, flash in the pan. Oh, do you remember when I did that series on TV? Like, I never, ever expected it to like roll on and roll on and roll on like it did. I think in the end, we'd done like over 150 gardens.
God, that's absolutely incredible. And I'm not going to say what's your favourite, because I think that's such a cruel question. But, but I guarantee that when I say what's your favourite, there's probably one or two that kind of pop into your mind just randomly. Are there any that really kind of stand out?
Definitely. Yeah, I think two of my favourites were, we did a Japanese themed garden. I've always liked Japanese design, and I went to Japan on my honeymoon. So we did like a little, we converted this old shed into a little tea house. And we put all these little details in, like lots of bamboo and the black string kind of detailing around it. And then a lovely mosaic out of pebbles around a water feature. So it had lots of lovely little Japanese details in that I was very fond of, and a lovely cloud pruned ilex, and it was really nice. And then another one which I liked, just again because it kind of spoke to me, my personality and things that I like, was a Glastonbury themed one which had a big kind of bell tent, and we made like the, I don't know if you know the park stage at Glastonbury, but with all the ribbons we made like on the climbing frame, we made it look like the park stage, and yeah, it was really cool.
Oh, I've never seen that one. That's great. I wonder if that's still available to watch.
Yeah, it was good.
But it is, isn't it? Yeah. I love it. I have recently, very recently, talked to someone that you'll know very well, Rosie Irving. And we talked quite a lot about Garden Rescue, but we didn't talk about Love Your Garden. And she talked a little bit about the kind of the reality of these kind of shows. Because I think what we see and what it is are actually quite one and the same. But I think there's quite a lot of people that will think, oh, well, you've actually got 6 weeks to do it, and you know, all this kind of stuff. That's just not the reality of it at all, is it?
No, we have 5 days from start to finish. So yeah, I don't wish we had 6 weeks. It would really drag it out, but 5 days is a push. We're always working until the last minute. I think there's only ever been one garden where we finished like maybe an hour ahead of time. Otherwise, we're kind of sweeping and hosing and brushing off soil, like, and fluffing cushions, like, until the minute before the people arrive back home.
It's incredible that what you achieve in such a relatively short time, because obviously, you know, there's not one or two of you on there, that there's a team, but even that is not, it's not a huge team, is it really?
No, I suppose it's not. I mean, we usually have a team of 5 or 6 landscapers. Then we have production like Rosie, and then the presenters, But the thing about Love Your Garden is when people need to get involved, they do. Like, you know, there'll be times when directors are planting if we're pushed, you know, and the kind of cameramen will be helping lift heavy stuff. And so it is a real team effort. It has to be, you know, not always it has to happen. But if it does, then people get muck in and get involved. It's if all four presenters are busy doing other things and don't have the time to, you know, fix that water feature, you know, you might get a sound guy that's like, oh, I've done this water feature before. I'll have a look at it for you.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Yeah, it's a big team effort.
Yeah, I can imagine. What are the kind of obvious like horror stories that you remember that have been, you know, something has just not gone to plan?
Oh God, I remember one, it was only a couple of years ago actually, and it was this outdoor fireplace that we had built. So it was like a freestanding breeze block wall of about 7 meters high and depth, you know, it had to fit like a fire in that you could see from both sides, like a fireplace. And we had made specifically for it a steel, powder coated steel cassette to go over the top of it, I suppose. So we didn't paint it, it had like a lovely metal finish all the way around this fireplace. And because the wall hadn't been built like exactly plumb, and obviously the steel had, trying to get that steel over the wall was trying to get like a size 10 shoe in a size 6. You know, it was just it was so very, very stressful and so loud because we were having to like bang this metal and we couldn't do any filming because the noise was so
loud.
Did all the filming and then we had to use an angle grinder and like slit it all at one side. It was just like that was pretty bad. Yeah.
Do you know something that I've just thought of and I've never really thought of before? I think sometimes what you'll get when the kind of family come to look at the garden for the first time, whatever, sometimes you'll get the odd shot of the neighbours kind of congregating to watch and whatever. But I'm literally just thinking now about the neighbours when you're doing all of this kind of stuff. I bet there's a lot of like curtain twitching and everyone kind of watching you from next door.
So much, especially when Alan turns up. Like, you know, they're all kind of out there, stood out the front garden with their books open for them to sign and things like that. So they all like a good nosy and chat with Alan. Mostly the neighbours are so valuable because we basically take over their gardens as well as the garden that we're doing. We need to put the plants somewhere. We need to put all the furniture somewhere. So I always feel really guilty because all the plants arrive and we put them in these neighbours' gardens and all these gardens sort of look amazing. And then we take them all back out.
Yeah. God, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's we usually take over the street.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. I bet it's a whole street effort, isn't it? So yeah, I bet it's interesting. Yeah. I bet. So you do. So other than you know, you're so much more than Love Your Garden, obviously. You also do. You kind of run your own consultation on the side as well. So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, I do. So I do online consultations and consultations in person, and they are, I suppose, come from a very ideas place. So I did lots of garden design for years where I do lots of detailed drawing and lots of kind of construction details and things like that. And I found that it actually dragged me away from what I liked doing the most, which was being out in the garden. So I kind of wanted to be able to offer a service that stopped me being behind a desk as much, and also give a lot of people what they wanted, which is generally they just want ideas of what to put where. You know, where do I best put my patio? I've already got this hard landscaping in. How do I make borders look nice around it? Because I don't have the money to spend on redoing my whole garden. You know, how do I develop this border and make it look more exciting than it does without ripping out the whole thing? So it's kind of a lot more. I'll do like really simple sketches about what to put where. I'll give them lists of plants that will survive in the area, and I'll also kind of advise them on how to make planting look good and how to use form and structure. And so it's kind of a lot more consultative, I suppose, than just turning up and doing a guard, like handing over design and saying everything's got to be taken out and it's all got to be done. You know, it's all got to cost you 40 grand and so it's nice because it actually has meant that my client base has become so much more varied, which is lovely, because the reality is that very few people can afford to to pay a garden designer and have, you know, a garden designer come in and do the garden for them. It's a really expensive thing to do. So this feels really quite, yeah, as cheesy it sounds, quite rewarding, because you get like young families, you know, doing it, and like people that just, yeah, my client base has broadened massively because it feels a lot more accessible for people, which is nice.
So I think there's something, obviously, every year when we kind of we get to this point of the year where the shows have started and we're starting to see kind of all the show gardens and things like that, and kind of real trends emerge. But at the time of us recording, we're actually pre any of the major shows. Actually, none of the shows have really started. With your kind of design, kind of visual eye, are there any trends that you kind of think might come out of this year? Was there anything you've kind of seen that you think, oh, that's going to be something? Because obviously the last few years, I won't say that there's nothing that's emerged, but I think there's lots of kind of rewilding that's still a big thing, and kind of repurposing and all of that kind of thing. But is there anything that you've seen that might be a new trend?
I'm not sure. I think the sustainability thing is still definitely there, and it has to be, quite rightly. But what I would like to see is, I definitely thought last year from a lot of the shows, like a lot of that wow factor, like Dermot Gavin factor was missing.
Yeah.
Even though his gardens were controversial and like a bit bonkers and wacky, I kind of liked that he was willing to do something quite extreme and new and novel.
Yeah.
So, you know, with these ones that used to hang from cranes and things like
crane
that.
Crane one, yeah.
Yeah, so I think in the last couple of years, garden design has become a bit serious. Mm. And I think that, you know, it's had to go through that, because we do need to think about sustainability. We do need to think about our plant health and the health of our soil and things like that. And all these things did need bringing to people's attention.
Mm.
Now I would like to see that kind of swept up and still have this kind of extraordinary design and kind of a bit more of that, yeah, like dynamic impact, and see some exciting stuff coming through in that regard. I think that would be really nice.
I think you're right. I think there's been so much focus on all of that, and as you say, quite rightly. But I think when you think about a show garden, or you think about the history of show gardens, there are so many that are, as you say, kind of wow factor, or are such a spectacle. And I think that's not to say that these haven't been spectacles, but I think they you can kind of get to a point where your options are limited in terms of what you can do when you're trying to talk about sustainability. And it also, to a certain extent, kind of mutes your color palette and things a lot as well. And there's a lot of grays and kind of muted tones.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see some fun. As much as, you know, I don't mind the odd thought-provoking garden, I do also just want to be like, oh my god, that's so amazing and fun.
Yeah.
You know, I really want that kind of spectacle, that show garden. That's what I really want to see more of. And I think that, yeah, I'm hoping that there's a little bit more of that, a bit more of the fun, as well as the sustainability, kind of finding that balance and things like that, and the serious things. But yeah, it has all felt quite serious for the last couple of years, so it would be nice to see some in that regard.
Yeah, I totally agree. Something else that you've kind of, I suppose, quite recently announced is that you're retraining as a health coach. Are you, I was going to ask you if you're still going to be gardening too, but you've obviously got your consultations and stuff, so I presume that you're still going to be gardening as well.
Yeah, well, I think the gardening will phase out over time as I kind of rebuild my career coaching clients. I qualify in May, all being well, should I pass my exam, fingers crossed. So, yeah, I have that in May, and then my new health coaching business will hit the ground running come September. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying the transition. It's a lot kind of managing the two careers at the moment, kind of keeping the gardening going and retraining and learning.
Yeah,
but I'm not saying that I will get rid of gardening forever, because I love gardening and it's a huge part of me, and the natural world is something that inspires me every day, and that will never leave me. But I was definitely just ready for a change, some new learning, to learn something new. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the idea with the new business? What will you primarily be doing?
So health coaching is lots of kind of one-to-one coaching, I suppose, I could do with the garden consultations, do talks, but it's all about looking at people's health holistically. So as maybe a GP, if you went to the GP with a list of symptoms, they might prescribe you medication to suppress those symptoms. A health coach gets to the root cause of what is causing those symptoms from a very kind of looking at all parts of your life, whether it be stress, relationships, nutrition, exercise, things like that. And it's like, how, what are we doing in across all aspects of our life that could actually be causing that symptom, and dealing with it is root cause in a much more holistic way.
Wow. Okay. Well, I can't wait to see as that progresses. But I think there will be lots of people listening that will be quite sad that if you step away from gardening permanently.
Oh, thank you. But like, I won't be always gone forever. Yeah.
No, of course not. No. Okay. Well, we've reached that point of the podcast where I've got three questions for you. One is from me. One is from my previous guest, which I will tell you about in a minute. And then the third one is a bit of a surprise, so we'll get to that one in a minute. Are you ready for these three questions? Okay, brilliant. So the first one is, what is one plant that you have always struggled to grow and you just cannot get along with?
Probably carrots. Not really.
Okay.
Yeah. I've never had any success with carrots. I'm a terrible carrot grower. I must have tried 3 or 4 times and never succeeded. So probably carrots.
I wonder what that is. I've done the same. And I think sometimes you can almost get bogged down in the advice. And I remember the first time trying to grow them and people saying, you know, you've got to have really sandy soil and it doesn't need to be very good, not particularly nutritious and all that kind of stuff. And then I think you make such an effort of trying to make it sandy and trying to rip out the nutrients that you always almost end up just messing it up completely, don't you?
I've tried the little globe ones, the little chantenay ones. Like, I've just, yeah, over the years, I must have tried 4 or 5 times and just no success. Okay. So probably carrots.
Carrots, all right. I don't think anybody's said that yet this series. So carrots are the first. Okay. The second question is from the previous guest, which in this case is gardening journalist and editor of amateur gardening magazine, Kim Stoddart. And she asked, what is your favourite gardening place, either in your own garden or a garden that you've been to and you're very fond of? So it could either be a portion of your own garden or a garden that you particularly love.
I once went to visit the Cottage Herbary, I think it's called, in Shropshire. And I was so bowled over by how beautiful it was that it made me cry.
Oh, wow.
I just found it really emotional. I just loved it. It was all like an old agricultural building framework and all open at the sides, but they'd planted through it all like a gravel garden. And it was just like, oh, it was just delicious.
Okay.
Found it made me really emotional. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Okay, I'll find a link to that online and add it in the description if anyone wants to visit that, which I do. I'm not a million miles from Shropshire, so I definitely want to.
There's a plant nursery there. It's also, you can buy plants and, yeah. It's
perfect. Perfect. Okay. And the final question then is, as you've probably guessed, is I'd like you to leave a question for the next guest and then I'd like you to answer it yourself.
I suppose it would be, what makes a garden special to you?
Okay. So, posing your question back to you, what makes a garden special for you?
It's all about a feeling. A good garden for me is all about a feeling that it gives me, that kind of feeling of restoration and peace and being surrounded by nature. So it's not about the design for me necessarily, although obviously good design contributes towards that feeling. But I've been in lots of different gardens and got this feeling. Not every garden gives me it.
You can find out more from Katie by following her on Instagram, where you'll find her as Katie_gardens. Katie's website, katierushworth.com, is where you can find out about the rest of Katie's garden work and how you can book your own consultation. The Cottage Herbary that Katie mentioned in this episode has sadly now closed its doors, but they are still active on Instagram, where you'll be able to find them as The Cottage Herbary. Join me again next week, where I'll be in conversation with someone else from the world of plants. Until then, do make sure to rate and review on your podcast platform of choice. You can also see what I'm up to in my garden by following me on Instagram at View From The Potting Bench or reading my blog on viewfromthepottingbench.com. See you again next week.